John Scott joins us on Sports Byline. He's one of the great sports stories ever, and particularly in hockey. He played over eight NHL seasons with Minnesota, Chicago, the Rangers, San Jose, Arizona, and Montreal. And his final season in hockey is one that movies are made of and books are written about, and that is exactly what John has done. He was an average Joe who became a sports superhero overnight when he went from being a tongue-in-cheek candidate for the 2016 NHL All-Star Game to the game's MVP. And John reflects on his life, career, and his final season in the NHL in his book, A Guy Like Me, Fighting to Make the Cut. First of all, John, you played more than eight seasons in the NHL with six teams. So what does that tell us about your hockey career?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a lot of people wanted me to play on their team, and a lot of people maybe were done with me on their team. I don't know. I just think I grinded out a career that most people didn't think I was going to have, basically.
Tell me a little bit about growing up in St. Catharines, Ontario.
Yeah, it's a blue-collar town. We, you know, the auto industry is huge there. Ford, GM have big plants there right on the Welland Canal. So it's just your normal blue-collar town where everyone works hard and kind of makes a decent wage.
And certainly hockey is the national pastime up there, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's in the winter, it's hockey, and that's all they talk about. In the summer, they talk about spring training and getting ready for hockey.
Well, growing up in Ontario, you were a Boston Bruins fan, certainly of Ray Bourque. What was it about him that caught your attention?
He just moved the puck so effortlessly, and he was the captain of the team, obviously, and I just kind of latched onto him. He just did it all, and I don't think he got a lot of recognition for how good he was, and I just really loved the Bruins, and he was my guy. I was a defenseman back in the day, so it was easy for me to like him.
And tell me a little bit about how you ended up in Michigan Tech.
Yeah, I out of juniors, I went and played a year in Chicago randomly, and I had one offer of a scholarship, and it was Michigan Tech. So I took it, and luckily it was a great school, so it worked out well. But it was an easy offer to take when you only have one offer on the table.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about college hockey. Is it a type of feeder system that really prepares players for professional hockey?
Yeah, it's getting a lot better. When I was growing up in Canada, I'll be honest, I didn't know college hockey even existed. So the idea of going there, I was kind of naive to the whole thing and how good it was. But it is producing a lot of good players lately. You just look around the league, guys like Zach Parise and Phil Kessel and Jonathan Toews, and the list goes on, Joe Pavelski. It's producing a lot of high-end talent where I think guys from the United States and even Canada, they just think it's another avenue where it's not a pressure-packed league like the OHL or WHL is, and you get more of a learning experience when you go to college.
John, you were certainly a load at 6'8", 260 pounds, and you really became an enforcing physical defenseman. And I'm just wondering, did you adapt to that because you felt that was the best path to be able to get you to where you wanted to go in hockey?
No, that was honestly my game. I've played that style my whole life. I grew up, I was never the fastest guy. I was never the best with the puck, and I just think that was something I was good at, and I just kind of played to my strengths. I was a strong guy who could kind of make a play and shut down plays, and I just love throwing the body around. I've always enjoyed being physical, so it was just something I did, and I just continued to do it as I got older.
I was really surprised to see your numbers when you were at Michigan Tech. I mean, you recorded 19 points with 347 penalty minutes in your time. You're laughing as well. And I'm just wondering, thinking back on the college hockey that I've seen, don't they kind of downplay that type of physicality in the game at that level?
Yeah, well, it was college hockey's physical, but it was just they were instituting the new rules in the NHL with the hooking and the clutching and the grabbing, and I was an old-school D-man who liked to throw the can opener between the guy's legs and knock him over. So it took the learning curve took a little bit longer for me, I guess. But, yeah, I'm a physical guy. What do you want me to say? It's just my game.
And, you know, the players that I've known in hockey that are physical guys have told me it's an art form. Now, what are they talking about when they say, you know, being an enforcer or a physical player is an art form?
Yeah, it's honestly hard to throw a body check in the NHL nowadays just because there's all this worry about targeting the head and making sure you're hitting people through the body with their shoulder. So it is an art form trying to time when someone's either coming over the blue line or forechecking somebody. It's a lot harder than you would think. And to be a good body checker, I think of a guy like Cal Clutterbuck or Matt Martin, those guys just throw body checks like crazy. It takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of timing. So it's definitely an art form. And as for fighting, it's just nobody wants to do it. And the guys who do it, they take pride in it. And I took pride in being a fighter and being a guy who protected my teammates. And there's definitely a skill of when to fight, when not to fight, and who to fight. And, you know, there's different variables that go into it. So it's more than just dropping the gloves and fighting than people think.
John, I know in baseball there are certain unwritten rules, and what I'm talking about is if you're up by 8 runs in the 8th inning, you don't steal second base if you get on first.
Yeah.
What are those unwritten rules in hockey?
You know, it's just you don't, in fighting, particularly if a guy's down or you have someone in a bad position, you don't hurt him. And yeah, when it's in hockey, if you're up by 4 or 5 goals and you get a power play, you don't put your top guys out there. You put maybe the 3rd or 4th line. You don't really try to bury a team. You just make it more, you know, just a civil game. You're not trying to embarrass somebody. And I think the same goes for baseball and football and hockey. You just really, you wouldn't want them to do that to you, so you just kind of take it easy on them if you get the opportunity to.
What are the do's and don'ts as far as the stick goes?
You know, you keep it below the shoulders. You try. And you try not to hack somebody in between the wrist and the elbow pad. Like, there's no padding there usually. And you try not to get somebody behind the legs. There's no padding there. Just basically try not to get somebody where there's no padding. You don't want to break someone's wrist or break someone's finger. It's just kind of pointless. Like, there's places where you can slash a guy and it hurts. The top of the skates is a popular one that hurts a lot. But you can get your message across without breaking a bone or, you know, injuring somebody long term.
I know in football, the linemen tell me that there's a lot of talk across the offensive and defensive lines. I know the game is fast in hockey, but how much communication between opponents goes on?
Oh, it's everyone's always chirping. Like, it's just either good or bad. You're always guys are talking nonstop. That's one of the crucial things. If it's you're talking to your own team, your coaches are always harping on you. More chatter. I want to hear you from the bench, just because it's all about communication and like letting your teammate know where the other team is. And conversely, if you're talking to the other team, it's usually trash talk. But there's trash talk going nonstop on the ice.
I had a friend of mine that was on the San Francisco 49ers in their glory years, and he talked about one of his offensive linemen who was a Christian, and he would come up to the offensive line and he'd start proselytizing to the opponent on the other side of the line. And then when the ball was snapped, he said he slapped him upside the head with a forehand.
That's great. I love that. That's old school. That's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Tell me some of the players that really were good at doing that sort of thing, not only the physicality, but just the talking, had a way to get their point across.
Oh, my goodness. Dude, like a guy like Steve Vaught, he plays for the Detroit Red Wings now. He was the best talker I've ever come across in my life. It was amazing. He could get under anybody's skin. Like, you could be the most composed guy, like, just have not even an angry bone in your body. He would find something about you, and he would just pick at it until it would just drive you nuts. And he just was so good at it. I protected him for 2 years, and he got me in more fights than anybody else I played with. He was just so good at getting our guys' skin.
Great story about you being called up. The first time you were called up, you were unable to play in the game against the Maple Leafs in Toronto. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it was a funny situation. I was on the road with my AHL team, and we were on just like a two-day road trip. So, you know, we fly into Chicago, we play Chicago and another team, and we fly back to Houston. So nobody packs much, and I didn't pack much. I packed maybe an overnight bag and my toothbrush. So that was it. And then I get a call after my first game from my coach saying, all right, you're flying out tonight. You're going to Canada. Bring everything. Bring your hockey gear, your clothes. I'm like, all right, cool. And so I get to the airport. I fly from Chicago to Minnesota, and I'm on my connecting flight to Canada, and they're asking me for my passport. And, of course, I didn't bring it. This was, you know, 10 years ago. And I said, okay, I don't have my passport. And they said, well, you need it to fly to Canada. And I was just like, no, I'm going to go play in the NHL in Canada. Like, I was just trying to, and that's for the Minnesota Wild, and I was in Minnesota. So I was trying to convince this lady, and she wasn't having it. And I was losing my mind at the gate watching my plane pull away. I'm like, oh, it was like, there goes my dreams pulling away. I was just losing it. They almost called security on me because I was just so, yeah, I was irate. And so I called the GM. And I said, listen, I didn't make the flight. And he's like, all right, back to Houston. Send me back down. And, yeah, I didn't get called up for a long time after that. I thought I had blew my only chance at making the NHL. I was just distraught.
We got about 30 seconds before we have to break. Your first game was against the Detroit Red Wings. Your first goal, though, came against Michael Layton of the Carolina Hurricanes in a 5-4 loss in a shootout. What was your reaction to that?
It was nice. I was surprised I scored. I kind of jumped in from the point, and it was just a relief. Like, okay, I got one in the books. I scored, and I can kind of relax. And I was worried I wasn't going to score forever, so it was more of a relief and just kind of a surreal moment for me.
John, hold on just a second. We'll talk about the rest of your career and, of course, that memorable 2016 season with a man that kind of went from nowhere to being someone that nobody will ever forget. They're talking about doing a movie. He has a book out that I want you to check out. In fact, we're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It's a great read. It's called A Guy Like Me, Fighting to Make the Cut. And I think it'll give you great insights into John and also his career. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline. John Scott is with us on Sports Byline. If you're a hockey fan, you certainly know that name. Be sure to check out the book. It's a wonderful read. It's called A Guy Like Me, Fighting to Make the Cut. What motivated you to write this book?
Yeah, I just think I did an article with the Players Tribune right around the All-Star game, and it got such great response, and everyone honestly was just like, you should write a book. Your story is really interesting, and people are interested in, you know, your life and how you got to the NHL and just your thoughts. And I kind of hemmed and hawed and sat on it for a while. And after the season, I just said, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I had the opportunity, and I made a couple phone calls. And next thing you know, I was writing a book, and it just kind of worked out perfectly.
You mentioned about the fact that players are blue-collar. I agree with you 100%. I had a nice conversation with Paul Kariya one time, and I have other friends in the league as well. And there is something about hockey players that's different than any other group of athletes. And I haven't been able to put my finger on it, except they seem to be very well-grounded. Am I correct in that observation?
Yeah, I think you are. I've run across a lot of athletes, you know, across the sports, and it just seems like hockey guys are normal. I think we treat people with respect. I think we're just kind of your normal guy you'd meet any given day. So I don't know why that is, but it just seems to be that hockey guys are just more grounded and they're easier to talk to than other sports for some reason.
Certainly, John, every athlete wants to be grounded with a team for a long period of time. In 2010, you left the Wild as a free agent, signed a 2-year deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. From there, it was a succession of teams, the Rangers, the Sabres, Sharks, Coyotes, and Montreal. How hard is that to do, to adjust, to move your family, to do the things that go with moving around in a particular professional sport?
Yeah, that's the hardest part about it. It would be nice to spend your whole career in one city, but it didn't work out that way for me. But my wife was a champ. She knew kind of what she was getting into, and she just told me to go for it. And she was really the catalyst behind me moving around. If it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would have bounced around as much as I did. She really did support me, and we kind of just looked at it like an adventure. We'd move from one city to the next, and we'd spend the year there, and it was a cool experience for us and the kids. Like, we got a chance to live in California and Arizona and Buffalo and all over the country. So it was just it was fun. We made the best of it, and it was just a good time in our life.
Talk to me a little bit about the hockey fan, the pro hockey fan, because if you go, I don't think the sport plays well on television. That's me, because I understand and appreciate the speed and the stick handling ability of the players. But when you're in an arena, there is something about it. It's electric. Help me understand what the fan sees and why they love this sport.
Yeah, it's the one sport where it's better live, I think. I think football and baseball, they're better for the TV viewer. I think hockey, it just doesn't translate when you watch it live. It's just there's something about being in a hockey arena and the speed you don't see on TV, like the changes and the hits and the passing and the slap shots. And it's cool to watch a game live. I think it's just better. It's so fast. Everyone who goes and sees the game for the first time, they're like, wow, I had no idea it was just this fun, because on TV it kind of is boring. Like, you don't really get the whole feel of it. So I encourage everyone to go out and check a game wherever you are. It's just awesome. I don't know. I can't say enough about it.
Let's talk a little bit about the 2016 season. On January the 2nd, you were announced as the winner of the NHL All-Star Game fan vote. What was your reaction to that?
Shocked, surprised. I by that point, I'd saw it coming, but yeah, it was just, when am I going to be the All-Star? Like, honestly, I was just this fighter guy who didn't get many points, and all of a sudden I'm the talk of the NHL for the whole month that I'm going to the All-Star game. So it was definitely surreal. And, you know, you have to give your head a couple shakes just to kind of pinch yourself almost like you're not dreaming.
And let's put that into perspective for just a moment. You received the most votes of any player despite having only recorded 1 point in 11 games played with the Coyotes. You spent much of the season as a healthy scratch and scoring 5 goals in his entire career up to this point. I think you're an All-Star.
Yeah, you know, there's different roles in hockey, and obviously mine wasn't. I would have liked to have more points, but that wasn't my job. I played defense for the first few years of my career, and I was just a stay-at-home D-man. And then when I became a forward, I played 7-8 minutes a night. My job was to be physical and hit and fight every once in a while. So scoring wasn't really on my radar. I tried my hardest, but it just, you know, it wasn't in my bag of tricks. So when everyone talks about my points, like, oh, you only scored 5 goals. Like, yeah, but I played 300 games, and there was a reason I played those games, and I did my job good. So it would have been nice to get points, but I still did my job in different ways, and teams obviously knew that, and that's why I kept bouncing around all these teams. They needed me.
And certainly any pro athlete knows it's a business, because on January 15th for you in 2016, you were traded to Montreal. And after you were traded, the Canadiens sent you down to their American Hockey League affiliate, the St. John's Ice Cap. Nobody likes to go down. How do you mentally and emotionally handle that as a pro athlete?
Yeah, that was a tough one because it was just such a weird circumstance behind everything. So it was, it just took a lot to kind of wrap my head around because I didn't want to go. It was such a weird point in my career. I was obviously on the tail end of it, and I didn't think I deserved to be sent down. I think it was just kind of a bad decision. So it was tough. Again, you lean on your family, you lean on the ones around you to kind of give you some support, and you just kind of plow through it. You have to look in the mirror and say, listen, I'm still playing hockey. I'm making a living doing this, and that's okay with me.
One of the things that bothers me about professional sports is the sports take themselves too seriously. And I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking more about the organization of professional sports, albeit either the NFL or the NHL. We've certainly seen a lot of examples of that. And you certainly got caught up in that because it was reported that the NHL and the Coyotes had requested that you be removed or remove yourself from the All-Star team. Tell me a little bit of how that came down.
Yeah, it was just they didn't really want me to play in the game. I think they were either worried about me or worried about me embarrassing the NHL and just kind of, it was going to be a new NHL All-Star Game format with the 3-on-3, and they were really pushing speed and talents, and they didn't think I was going to be able to keep up. So they tried to, you know, persuade me to drop out and this and that, and I just didn't want to. You know, the fans wanted me in there, and I thought it was going to be a good experience. So I said, no, I'm going to stick around. And then, you know, the subsequent trade being sent down and all these conspiracy theories and this and that. So it was a trying time, and it wasn't very fun. So it was, you know, it was a tough time.
What type of pressures did they put on you?
Just trying to convince me, you know. Just I had a couple talks with the NHL, and they just try, you know, they lean on you a little bit. They say, is this what you want? Do you think your teammates are going to respond to this? What do you think your family's going to think of this? And just, you know, saying certain things, like, do you think you'll be able to keep up? You know, you're a pretty big guy. You're not very fast. You don't want to embarrass yourself and stuff like that. And they just try to put thoughts in your head, negative thoughts, and it's just not very constructive. So anytime they try to do that, I just kind of said, beat it, and I'm going to do what I want to do. So,
and the fans, you know, really were important in you probably deciding to ultimately do it. I mean, they really rallied around you in a big way, didn't they, John?
Well, they were huge. They were one of the main factors of me actually going, because I had nothing but overwhelming support from them. And if they would have just treated me like a joke and treated me like, you know, an outcast, I would have never gone. But they really did say, listen, we want you to go. We think it'd be fun. We know you're a tough guy. We want you to go. So I just kind of rallied behind them and my family, and I said, you know what, let's do it. And I went.
Certainly all-star players have a lot of focus on them. But in your particular case, because of the circumstance, I would assume that glare of the light was a lot brighter. What did you expect the NHL All-Star game to be like, and how was it similar to or different from what you thought?
I honestly didn't know what to expect. I was hoping it was going to be a fun game. I didn't think it was going to turn out the way it did. It turned out it exceeded every expectation I had, because I was honestly nervous. I didn't know how it was going to be received from the fans and the players and the league and everybody. Even the league, they were really happy to have me, and they kind of welcomed me with open arms. And it was just an awesome experience for me and my family. It's one thing I would never give up. I'm glad I went because I think it just changed my life, and it was just fantastic.
A couple of my friends who, baseball players who went to the All-Star game the first time, said walking into that locker room and seeing all the great players in there and thinking that I was a part of that was kind of overwhelming. Was it the same way for you?
Yeah, it was very overwhelming. You sit in that locker room and you look around, it's just like, okay. Usually when you sit down in your locker room, there's two or three guys who are the superstars. Then when you go there, there's literally 35 guys who are superstars, and then there's you. So it's very overwhelming. Like, all these guys are potential Hall of Famers, and there's me who has 5 goals in my life. So it's just like, okay, well, this is the real deal. Like, you better – then all those thoughts start coming in. It's like, okay, don't embarrass yourself. Don't fall down. Like, don't prove everyone right. Like, you really do have to focus on playing good because these guys are just out of this world good.
What is the commonality of great players in hockey?
I don't know. I don't know if it's just the natural talent or what they – it's just – they just have this mindset that they're the best and they – can do things with the puck that no one else can do. It's just funny. I don't have that mindset. I have to work every second I'm on the ice, but they seem to just comes easy to them. It's almost frustrating because you see these guys with the puck and they just go, and they just do things that are just crazy.
It's one thing to be voted into the All-Star game. It's another to be the MVP of the All-Star game. For the Pacific team, you scored 2 goals and you were named the MVP. Does it still overwhelm you a little bit, John?
Yeah, I think I'll always kind of question actually what actually happened. But it's just like, it's amazing to think back and actually realize what happened and what I did and just how it all played out the way it did. And yeah, it's like a movie. It honestly is, and I know it's kind of cliche to say that, but it was just surreal how it ended up. Yeah, I scored the goals, and we won the tournament, and everybody thought we were going to be the worst team because of me, and I ended up winning the MVP. So it was kind of bitter. You know, it was a nice shove it to the people who didn't think I could do it. So it was it was awesome.
That's one of the things that I've always said about sports. There's always a new way to determine the outcome, and that's why it's still something that I look forward to. And then you add the human element to it as well. I know that when athletes get to the end of their career, trying to make that final decision, do I stay in the game one more year or do I retire, is always a difficult one. I know that you miss the comradeship that you have in the locker room, no matter what the sport may be. But take me through your thought process of saying, that's it, I'm walking away.
Yeah, it's always hard. I think it's something you grow up, and that's what you are. That's what you relate to your whole life. That's what people think of when they look at you. So it's never easy, but I was lucky enough to have opportunities and my family and my kids, and it was easier for me to walk away just because I felt like I accomplished everything I needed to accomplish in hockey. Like, I was never the best player, so even to play in the NHL for as long as I did was a blessing, and I was more than happy to walk away. I had a few opportunities to go and play, and I just said, I'm okay with not playing. So it was easier for me. Obviously, it was, you know, hard the first month away. You always get that itch, but it went away fairly quickly, and I'm okay with my decision. I'm happy with where I'm at right now.
We've only got 2 minutes left, but John, when you think back over your career in hockey, both as an amateur and a pro, I'm sure there are some moments that are kind of emblazoned in your mind. What are the ones that stick with you?
There's the big moments, like we talked about, my first game with the Wild, playing against the Red Wings, my first goal, you know, my first playoff game, the All-Star game, obviously, and then even not with hockey, like my kids were born in the cities I played in. So my oldest was born in Chicago, my second oldest was born in Buffalo, my twins were born right after the All-Star game here in Michigan. So you always tie together your family moments with hockey, and they'll forever be entwined for me just because hockey and my family were such huge parts of my life, and I just think that's the way it was, you know, and I just will always remember that. So it's cool to kind of have those pieces linked together like that.
I know that when you retired from hockey, you announced it in the Players Tribune article, and I love the title, 5 Goals, 4 Kids, 1 Hell of a Good Time. Tell us in about 40 seconds what that article was all about.
It was just almost like a thanks to everybody who helped me along the way. I really wanted to write an article to say thanks to my coaches and players and everybody in my family and wife, and just say thanks for everything they've done to me. Obviously, I wouldn't have been able to do it without them, and I had a lot of people help me along the way, and it wasn't easy, and it's just, I really did appreciate that. And I just think writing that article was a way to just kind of close the chapter on my hockey life and say, this is done. Thank you. And I'm moving on. So it was a good way to do it.
And what do you want people to take away from your book?
That I had to work for everything. I had a good support system behind me, and that I didn't get anything handed to me. I was a hardworking kid, and I just worked my way up, and I just kind of fell into this NHL career, and I made the best of it, basically.
John, it was a great story. It was a great run as well, and it's one of those stories in sports that I just love to hear about and to read about as well. Congratulations on your career. Congratulations on the way you wrapped it up, and congratulations on this wonderful book. As I said, we're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. Take care.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I had fun.
John Scott with us again, over 8 NHL seasons in the National Hockey League. And check out this book. Great read. It's called A Guy Like Me, Fighting to Make the Cut. We continue with more of you at America's Sports Talk Show.